Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 91 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today, and hopefully all week, if he can stand me for that many days, is Mark Hoffmeyer from Movies, Films, and Flicks. Welcome back, Mark.
Listen, this is my fourth one with you of these minute movie by minute. So we know our flow, and a lot more happens in this one than When Harry Met Sally. So which I adore, great movie, but we have snowmobiles in this. I'm just now realizing that 1990, I've covered a lot of the 1990 action films on the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. There's also mentions of C4, which if you watched a movie, an action movie in the 1990s, it felt like C4, you could just go to the grocery store.
Yeah, of course.
And buy
Can't
C4.
You? Can't because you?
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's like, I even made a short skit about a jetpack that shoots 50 miles, and we had Canadian C4. Like, C4 was just like, yeah, C4. You just get some C4 and slap it on it and do a little timer. And, like, yeah, it's by the vegetables. Like, just go get the C4. So we have C4, we have snowmobiles. We have in the making of doc about this, there's a talking about like Die Hard on Ice. Charlie Piccirni compared snowmobiles to jet skis, which I'm a big connoisseur of jet ski and snowmobile cinema. So this is a perfect chapter, perfect 5 minutes for me.
Which is why you're here for these minutes. I mean, come on. We talked about this, I think, over a year ago. You said to me, this is the week I want. And I said, it's yours. You know, there's no one else is getting it.
Yeah.
And there were other people who wanted it, just so you know. But I said, nope, Mark's got it. It's all his. So, you know, I keep my word.
I have so much data on snowmobile action scenes. Do you want to hear some interesting snowmobile stats real quick?
Let's do it a little bit later in the episode, because let's start with what's going on. Because right now, we're going to start off without any snowmobiles on screen. And we'll get there.
Yeah. Okay. I still forget. We got to work our way through.
Yeah, of course.
We don't pinball.
That's right. No pinballing.
Wait, there is a snowmobile in three seconds in. So that's good.
All right. But we still have to get the 3 seconds. Ah, you see. So we ended things on Friday with the bad guys leaving the church. And you see blue light. You know, they're beginning their assault on the church itself. And John is trying to figure out how come nobody notices that something's going on in the back and that they're getting away. So he goes to check it out himself. And then this minute begins, 91 begins with blue light beginning their assault on the church and ends with John taking a ride on a snowmobile. So what we have here is, you know, these group of, I guess, stuntmen, you know, from blue light, they're all, you know, making their assault on the church, and we basically, you know, they all have identical, you know, snowsuits, so you can't tell any of them apart. There's like no way of telling any of these guys apart. Some of them have names that are just thrown out, but we don't. The only one we really know the name of is Telford, you know, who's the radio guy, who we'll get to. You know, we're not gonna spoil anything here about that one, but all the rest, no names whatsoever. This minute actually begins with Grant using one of their names, but we don't know who Albertson is. He goes, Albertson, take your men around the back. Right. And we see them start getting closer to the church. And then at the 3 second mark for Mark, we see a shot of John running to the side of the church to try and find what's going on. And then we see a snowmobile driving away. Now we know who's on the snowmobile. Okay. Cause we saw it on Friday. We saw that the six guys that are still alive are getting on these snowmobiles. Okay. Did you notice the fact of how many snowmobiles there were for them to get on?
There's four.
No, there's five.
Oh, there's five. Okay, because two stop and then three take off. Correct.
That's right.
You're right.
There's 100%. There's five snowmobiles. Now, how do you think, we talked a little bit about this on Friday, but how do you think this fits in with Stewart's original plan? I mean, there were 12 guys with Esperanza. Okay. They didn't expect to lose any men. So they had 13 guys that they were going to somehow get on five snowmobiles.
Yeah, that's actually a great point. So you'd think that, what, 10 are covered. 3 is a massive crowd on snowmobiles. I mean, and maybe one of his people messed up. Maybe one of his people messed up.
Okay. Right? All right. That's fair.
You can't just get 5. Like, hey, I need 13 snowmobiles, or I need 10 snowmobiles. Actually, just give me 7 so we can double up. Have everyone can double up. You know, even 6, we'll triple on one. Just one. We'll put the lowest henchman on that.
Oh, they do have John Leguizamo with them, so they could, you know, put him on like the handlebars on one of them.
Yeah, exactly. And he actually does do some great snowmobile action scenes in that Santa Claus movie that just came out with David Harbour, Violent Night. There's some good jet ski action in that, or snowmobile action in that. But listen, it's tough. Like, you don't just go, hey, give me 13, give me this, give me that. Like, these are legitimate commandos. So they're like, maybe they would have found some to come with. Maybe they would have brought some there. I mean, there's 5 waiting. Maybe they would have had others.
Right. Well, that's another question. Where did these 5 come from? Did they bring them with them themselves? Yeah. Or does it happen to be that the church, you know, that's going to be a daycare center, happens to have 5 snowmobiles on the outside, you know, in case anybody wants to go, you know, do some sort of recreational sport, you know, in between prayers. Well, I don't know.
It's not a bougie church, so I don't know if 5 snowmobiles of that quality would be waiting there. But due to the weather and the location and the fact that, like, you know, there's the church, the kids, you would have snowmobiles there as a last resort. There would at least be one.
Okay. Are these high-quality snowmobiles? Are you able to tell?
Yeah, they're nice. Like, they're good snowmobiles. And whenever I visit Iowa, my family, they have snowmobiles out there, and they're just, you don't even know if they're going to start. So it's, you know, you check out these ones in this. These are brand new.
Yeah, of course.
So.
Well, because they're very high, they're heavily funded. Too, you know, they're a very well-funded group of terrorists.
I mean, listen, they're Yamaha snowmobiles, definite product placement. If Yamaha is putting something in there, I don't think they want them to look dirty.
Right.
I mean, have you ever seen a dirty snowmobile in a movie?
No.
Think about First Strike, clean. Let's see, Long Kiss Goodnight, clean. True Lies, clean. Inception, clean. I've never seen a dirty snowmobile.
Well, because usually you have to have them on snow, you know, so if you have something dirty on white, it will really, really show up.
Maybe. It's just, I mean, I get why they're clean, but just knowing, I've had some of the most terrifying moments of my life on a snowmobile. And knowing how dirty those all were and other ones I've been around, you know what? That's the big fallacy of snowmobile cinema, is that they're all clean.
Okay.
That's my issue with all this. Right.
That's right. Maybe, again, maybe, you know, maybe they sent Burke, you know, quote unquote, John Leguizamo out, and he had to, you know, clean off all of the snowmobiles, you know, beforehand. Maybe that's you're the low man on the totem pole, so you got to go clean them up.
He has that little flamethrower thing that he's hitting the yeah. I mean, I guess he is a man. I would hate to be a world class henchman and have to clean snowmobiles, but they do have a general on there. Like,
that's true.
They have a pretty high class. They have a high class person they're rescuing. So if they were just out on a mission, maybe dirtier is better. But also too, if you're a super, like, if you're stealth, right? They leave the hotel. McClane catches them. He's very observant. But if you're that secretive, I don't know if you'd want to park 5 brand new snowmobiles outside of an area.
Right.
Someone walks on. Well, man, look at those 5 snows. Those are nice.
Yeah, but they were under a tarp.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I mean, still, I would pull the tarp off. I mean, why not? You're all friends out there.
It's true. Well, but you did have Baker walking around making sure, you know, maybe Baker's job was to make sure that no one touches the snowmobiles. You know, not everybody would be willing to take on Baker like John does with an icicle. So I don't know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, just right in the eye. Yeah. I love Rennie Harlan talking about that. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
But yeah, so they're there. They have 5. It should be 13. They have the other crew there. It's just 13's expensive. And, you know, Joel Silver said this is one of the first movies where he looked at Rennie Harlan and was like, I don't know if I got it anymore. Like he had a little bit of a collapse on this movie, according to Rennie Harlan. Rennie Harlan did a interview about this film, and Joel, I was like, I don't think I have it anymore. So, you know, I think there's a bunch of snowmobiles, you know, like this many will be dead. We'll just get 5. Like, why get 13? Even though there are 13, there's only going to be this many left. So just get it. No one will notice. It's like when
Joker
and Batman
do.
Go under a bridge in Dark Knight, right? Like they go into a bridge in Dark Knight. And then when they come out, when they go in, it's day. When they come out, it's dark as dark. And Nolan was like, who cares before you did this minute? Did you ever think about that? Did you ever think about like...
About the snowmobiles?
Why aren't there 13?
No, yeah. Never, yeah. Never. I noticed it on Friday. That was it, you know. Beforehand, I didn't even think about it. It didn't even register that you need to think about those type of things. But that's also why we do movies this way, in order to catch these little
things.
Yeah, they're fun. You know?
Yeah, it gives you something to talk about.
Yeah, of course. There's always what to talk about. All right, so now we're going to talk a little bit about snowmobiles, because I know that's what you've been waiting for. All right? First of all, do you know other names for snowmobiles?
What, like snow cats? No, snow cats.
No. A snow cat is a brand of... Or it's a type. I'm just saying a different name. Okay, you have the Yamaha. You know, different names, synonyms for the word snowmobile. How's that?
Let's see. I'm pulling it. I just cheated. I saw one word that's snow machine.
Okay, that's right. Snow machine.
And then, someone called. That's not a Ski-Doo mountain bike. No, no one's ever called. Is it Ski-Doo? Snowmobile? That's what you call jet ski.
No, Ski-Doo is a brand name. It's like Arctic Cat, yeah. And Polaris. Okay. All right. So it can be called a snow machine. I don't know why. It can be called a motor sled, a motor sledge, a ski mobile.
Ooh.
Ski mobile, I've heard.
Ooh.
Ski mobile, I've heard before.
Yeah.
You know, or a snow scooter.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yes, so it is a.
But see, snow scooter. I don't know, because when you think about a scooter, there's like two wheels, right?
Usually, about
a snowmobile. Yeah, I like snow machine. That works. I like sled. What is it called?
Motor sled.
Automated sled.
No, motor sled.
Motor sled.
And motor sledge.
Motor sled sounds kind of hardcore. That's like Mad Max.
Yeah, stuff. It sounds like it. That definitely does. So,
where's my motor sled?
So, a snowmobile is a motorized vehicle designed for winter travel and recreation on snow. It was designed to be operated on snow and ice, and they don't need a road or a trail. And usually, you can ride them on open terrain, you know, wherever you're going. Up until the 1990s, they made snowmobiles that could hold 2 people, but ever since, most snowmobiles can only hold 1 person. And the few that they still make for 2 are known as 2-ups, which are used for like touring and stuff like that.
I just did one of those in Iceland on top of a glacier.
Oh wow, that's really cool. Now, do you know what the tracks used to be made of and what they're made of now?
What they used to be made of,
yes.
And what they're made of now. Okay. No, I do not.
Okay, they used to be made out of rubber, and now they are made out of a Kevlar composite, which might have worked well here if you use Kevlar, you know.
That makes sense. I mean, that makes sense, right? Probably.
Yeah.
Kevlar, how does this do in the heat? Like, I know these are snowmobiles, but you have to store them.
Right.
Is there less breakdown than the rubber?
I don't know.
I would think can crack.
I would think that's the reason why they switched it, because it's probably cheaper and it's probably, you know, more sturdy to do it that way. Do you know when the first snowmobile was invented or was patented? Let's go back
to that.
Let's say patented even.
Okay. So I feel like a snowmobile has been around longer than a jet ski. And I think that it was probably necessary almost as soon as vehicles came about, like thinking about getting through snow. So if there's like the
1911.
Oh,
yes.
See, I knew it was early, but yeah, I didn't know it was that early. Jeez.
Yeah. So in 1911, the first patented, it was known as a vehicle propeller. That's the way they were able to use it, that it would ride on snow, and they actually started calling them snow flyers at the beginning.
Snow fire?
Flyer.
Oh, snow flyer. I like
Yeah.
that. 1911.
Yeah, and only in 1917 did someone coin the word snowmobile. And to make them back in 1917 cost just about $400 in order to convert something into a snowmobile.
I mean, that's a game changer in 1911.
Yes.
I mean, snow traveling over snow is just so, it's just drudgy. Like, it's drudgery. And it's dogs, it's just skiing, but that only works if you're going downhill. So yeah, I love it. I love hearing
That's
it.
right. Now, how many people do you think, or what is usually the main cause for accidents and injuries on snowmobiles?
Well, I drove into a house, so I would say hitting an object.
Okay. That is definitely a possibility. So basically, it's usually people are killed on snowmobiles if they hit other snowmobiles, cars, pedestrians, rocks, trees, fences, or if they fall through thin ice. And they actually even state here that there are many places where somebody will park their snowmobile somewhere, and then when they get off of it, they will, the snowmobile, the way that it's balanced, it can hold on ice much better than a person could. So like someone dismounts basically and then
Oh.
falls through to that. There.
Well, think about the weight distribution on the skis,
Right.
right? The two skis and the way it's balanced
Right.
out. Like, that's,
Yeah.
yeah.
So usually about 10 people a year die in Minnesota just from snowmobile accidents. Usually alcohol is a contributing factor for obvious reasons.
I guess, people take their snowmobiles out to go fly, snow, like they'll put their cabin out on the lake and they'll take their snowmobile out to fish, and you just sit in your, you sit and fish, snow fish for hours and drink, and then driving back, not good. It's like boating on a lake. It's like Lake Lanier in Georgia. They made a horror movie about it.
Oh
So many
yeah, there are
accidents.
also a number of people that usually die a year doing something called rail riding. You have any idea what that
Oh
would mean?
no. Are they really rail riding? Trying to, I don't know, railroads, trying to ride the
No,
rails. I don't
trying
know.
to
Is that it?
get across the railroad tracks before the train gets there. It's
Oh
train
gosh.
dodging, I guess you can say.
It's in the fences are nightmares on a snowmobile because when I was riding in Iowa, a lot of the farms have, are fenced off, but there's like a lot of wire or barbed wire, and they get covered in snow, and like you could blast through one. Oh, what a
Right.
nightmare! What a nightmare! I think I get, I think I got early onset arthritis from one of my times on a snowmobile.
Oh, wow.
Instead of grabbing around my uncle's like chest, I grabbed onto the things in the back, and that's what held me on, and then he floored it. And then when I got off of the thing, I could barely open my hands from squeezing so tight, and it was so cold that like I couldn't barely move my arms because they like they froze in place around how tight I was grabbing around these handles.
Wow. Yeah, that does not sound comfortable at all.
It's
Yeah.
terrible.
Also,
It's
a
terrible.
lot of people get killed on what's known as high marking. Have you ever heard that phrase before? What it actually means is they drive a snowmobile as far up a hill as it can go. And
Oh gosh.
in numerous cases, that also causes avalanches. And they end up dying from that too. Yeah, so it's not
So it's like, it
if
seems like every
you need
death
to you
is.
need to be a little bit smarter with the way that you use snowmobiles, I guess.
I mean, people text while driving a car 70 miles an hour or 100 kilometers an hour, and the thing can explode and destroy people. So it's not surprising that people are dumb on snowmobiles. as well.
Right. I mean, in Canada, they say that an average of 73 people are killed every year in snowmobile accidents.
That makes sense.
Of course it makes sense, you know. Yeah. They also...
Is it time for
They
my,
also have races.
Is it time for my stats?
Once again, they also have all these races. You know, they have like yearly competitions with racing and stuff like that. So that's just crazy.
Who's the best snowmobile racer?
No, that I don't know. I didn't find out. But in Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan, they have what's known as the International 500, which is a 500-mile race on a track where you can win $40,000. And they've been doing that since 1969.
Yeah. Wow.
All right, I'm ready for your stats.
That's fun. Okay. Yeah. So, movies that feature jet ski action scenes.
Jet skis?
They have a tomato meter
jet skis?
Yeah, but I just want to give you a comparison. Oh, okay. I just want to give you a comparison.
Sorry.
They have a 28% tomato meter average. There's 17 of them.
Wow.
They have a domestic box office average inflated, adjusted for inflation. They average $61 million at the domestic box office. And their budget, their inflated budget, adjusted for inflation, budget is $73
million. Okay.
So
they lose money.
They make less.
They lose money.
Yeah, they lose money. Now, movies that feature snowmobile action scenes, there's 19 total that I have. They have a 47% tomato meter average, which is 19%
right.
higher mm-hmm. than jet skis. They have a domestic box office, the United States. I didn't do worldwide because worldwide's really hard to – it's really hard to inflate the box office for every country. So I just use domestic
That's fair.
For this. Now, domestic, $158 million. So that's,
wow.
That's a lot more. And their budget – is $112 million on
so
average.
They're still making
so
money.
So jet ski action scene movies, 28%, and they lose money. Snowmobile action scenes, 47%, and they make money. So we have Die Hard 2, Snow Day, True Lies, View to a Kill, The Living Daylights, Triple X, The World's Not Enough, Babylon AD, Inception, The Fate of the Furious, Jackie Chan's First Strike, Die Another Day, Agent Cody Banks, G.I. Joe, Rise of Cobra, Johnny English Reborn, The Santa Claus, Fred Claus, Wrong Turn 4, and Violent Night. So you have, you know, a decent amount of like the one in my total. They don't have the high action movies don't really have the highest tomato meter averages on like historically, right. But it just proves that snowmobile action scenes, if you're gonna do that or jet ski, I would lean towards snowmobile. The problem is you need
that's
the
snow. True. And well, you don't. This movie proves that you don't need the snow.
Yeah, exactly. You need potatoes. You need that's potatoes. I love fake snow in movies, and I love reading about fake snow. Like I love how Game of Thrones did their fake snow. I've worked on shows with fake snow. We use foam and a bunch of like white things, like white sheets that looked like snow to throw over shrubs. Like, and then I've always been obsessed with potatoes. So Rennie Harlan talked about that, where you use potato flakes or snow, and it looks great, but it's messy. It's just crazy that they had to hunt down snow. It reminds me of like Sorcerer and other movies where you build a bridge over a river and then the river dries up. Just an absolute nightmare to shoot. And I love it. But yeah, I mean, all things considered, I think they did a good job on this film. A lot of nights, a lot of on-location shoots, which I'm sure you've talked about. It's just, yeah. And I was really surprised. I know you've talked about this 1,000 times, but I love that it has a 70% tomato meter average and it's well rated on IMDb.
Is that the highest of the snowmobile movies?
No, Inception.
Oh, okay, right. I forgot Inception was there. Right, okay. So Inception's not really an action movie. That's true. There you go.
You just don't mess with that. But it's what I like is I don't know, people just seem on board with the insanity of this film. And it's just fun seeing Bruce Willis on a snowmobile. And I love that documentary I watched about him riding on it and Charlie Piserny talking about it. And just a fun, I love it. we're not at the end. Let's get to the end, but there's like one of my favorite lines.
All right.
We'll get there. Yeah.
All right. So then John starts running from the side of the church and he's got his gun drawn. And now he starts shooting. But it's just really weird the direction that he's shooting, because we saw at the end on Friday, we saw the snowmobiles leave and they were going like in a different direction. And here we have him shooting, and he shoots like 5 or 6 times, and we see that he hits somebody, and the snowmobile goes flying in the air, and then it lands, I guess, in a lake, because it just, you know, it just completely shatters the broken ice and all that stuff with the way that it does it. The problem with this is we don't even know who that is. You know, we'll know later on who's still alive, so we know who it's between. We know who the two people are that end up getting killed. Because then the next second we have another one of the snowmobiles, the guy stops and turns around and looks towards John, which, again, I don't know why he does that. And then John shoots another.
Never do that.
Then John shoots 5 or 6 bullets at him and kills him. So basically, I'll let the cat out of the bag. We know that it's both Burke and Garber that get killed here. Burke is John Leguizamo, as we mentioned numerous times in today's episode. And Garber is played by Don Harvey. He's the second in command, basically. So they're the two that get killed. I don't know which is which. It's hard to tell. You can't like look at them and say, okay, this guy's the short guy, you know, because John Leguizamo looks a little shorter than the rest of them. So I don't really know. I guess I would believe that it's John Leguizamo is the one that he shoots that goes flying, you know, through the air. That would be my guess, that's Burke, but I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, maybe from his jacket, he doesn't have his tactical jacket as the second in command. The second guy who gets killed has a nice black leather jacket on. And he's also, you know, I think since he's second in command, he probably wants to check up on his men. So he's looking to see what's going on.
Could be.
And then he gets dusted. Why don't stop? Like, one of your dudes. Also,
and if you stop, pull your gun up, put your gun up at the time. He's not even touching his gun as he stops. You know.
McClane nails that guy from what do you think? Like,
how
many yards?
At least
yards
50.
Out?
At least. But we know that McClane.
He has to run over.
That's right. We know that McClane is a good shot, you know. And
but at the 20-second mark, he runs at least 50 yards. And these are moving snowmobiles at one point.
That's right. And the other three just keep.
I love that.
I love how the other three just keep going. They're like, forget about it. They just keep moving.
Well, they've seen clear and present danger. They know. Just move. Go, 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 go. Don't stop.
That's true. I mean, they're four years away from that actually happening. But yes.
I mean, time travel is
right. Of course. There's always time travel. Come on, Mark. We know that.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's just. It's just strange that he stops and looks back, you know. And as I guess he deserved to die from that, you know. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, I mean, if you're a henchman, just go. Like, don't look back. Like the Oasis says, don't look back in anger.
That's right.
Don't look back at John McClane when he's shooting your people.
Yes. That's right.
But you know, but then we get the C4
moment. Yes. Okay. Then the shot changes and we're in the church, and it's really funny how everyone is already in the church, you know, and like there was no real assault. They weren't shooting or anything like that. Everyone just walks into the church, you know, and we get to see Barnes walk in with them because we see his, stencil on the back of his jacket saying Dulles Engineering because, you know, you have to have that, obviously, you know, but it's a great tracking shot the way that they do it, you know, that he walks through everybody and then he looks at all the equipment and he goes, this equipment, it could land our planes. What do you think? You know, he's like stating the obvious. And then Grant, you know, turns around and goes, don't touch anything. There were tripwires outside. They could have booby trapped. And now, first of all, how does he know that there were tripwires outside? You know, one of the guys did set off a tripwire. We know that. And we were debating last week whether it was done on purpose or not, because it looks as if someone just slashed the tripwire as opposed to your gun just getting caught on it.
Oh, they had to.
You know, again, it's all part of the plan, I guess you can say. You know, so, you know, Grant theoretically doesn't know that there were tripwires, you know, and then he goes, they could have booby trapped. And then we get one of the guys crouching, you know, if two of the guys crouching on the ground and one of them goes, they did. Another one goes, yeah, got one here. Looks like C4. The motherfucker's armed. What it looks like C4. That's the funniest thing, because in every movie where there's C4, it's actually stenciled on the C4. It says, "This is C4." Don't confuse it with C5 or C6.
Explosive.
This is C4. Now, I.
This C4 looks official though, because you do need that electric
That's right.
charge, and it is connected to by cables to a beeping
Yes.
thing. So at least the prop department took care to be like, okay, C4 needs electricity or a jolt,
That's right.
and we're going to give it that. So this is it's good
Yes,
C4ing, I will
that's right.
say.
Now, I talked about this a little bit last week. What does the blinking lights on the charger for the C4 remind you of? What other Rennie Harlan movie?
What? Well, I don't know if Deep Blue Sea has that. Maybe Cliffhanger?
Cliffhanger, that's right. When
Yeah,
he puts
because they
it
do
when he
have
puts it in the
those.
snow, when they're shooting at the rabbits,
Oh, yeah.
it
They
looks
always
exactly
that.
the same. Like Rennie Harlan must say to them, "Okay, we need blinking lights. Let's get blinking red lights. That's what we need."
He does do good stuff in the cold,
Yes,
Rennie. Devil's
that's
Pass,
right.
this, and Duck,
American born,
and Cliffhanger. He's,
or born American, born
yeah.
American,
Oh, yeah,
born
American Born.
American, born American.
Yeah, born, you're right, born American.
That's right.
Yeah, he does. He works good in the
Yes.
cold, I would say. Maybe those
I
Finnish
guess
people.
so. And then Grant screams out, "Clear the area, everybody, now!" And they all start rushing out. We have, and I counted, there are 10 guys here that are with Grant. And then we get the outside shot, and then everyone's just walking out nonchalantly out of the church. But then there are two more on the outside. So how do they have 13 guys? Because Teflon stayed in the in the truck. So they somehow got 13 guys here. I don't know. It's one of those diehard mysteries, where the exact number of bad guys or the exact number of guys are a little different. So whatever.
And I mean, they also can, in the first one, they fit that van in there with everybody, and then they walk out with plenty of room. They're shrinking. Like, this world has, maybe there's a quantum realm
Ooh.
in the Die Hard world. I mean, if you just look at it in the world, there was a van in
Well,
that
they needed
truck
two
with all
helicopters to
those
bring them
men.
all, and then they all fit into one truck.
Yep.
That's right. It's a good point.
Oh,
Good point. So
man.
he just walks out nonchalantly
I mean, it's.
and he goes over to Lorenzo and he goes, "They booby-trapped all the equipment. Seal off the building." And then Lorenzo, under his breath, goes out. And then Grant says, "Secure the area. Post sentries. No civilians allowed." And then Lorenzo just turns around and goes, "Hey, where the
To the best, one of the greatest moments ever of him just cruising on a snowmobile, hitting sweet
That's
jumps.
right. And last week we talked about the fact that no one noticed that McClane was missing, and this time he actually realizes that that they're missing.
And I love, he's clearly in a studio when he's flying away because none of his hair is moving. He's just on the jet ski looking, or on the snowmobile looking
Yes.
serious. Makes me so. And listen, if you've never snowmobiled before, you're not hitting sweet jumps right off the bat.
Especially
I'm
into
just letting you know
water.
that.
He's going in, he went, you know, he just killed Burke, and Burke, landed in the lake that's around there. And now he himself is driving across that lake. You'd think he would have been a little bit smarter than to do that. Stay
I
away
did
from
watch
the
the
lake.
doc where they set it up, which makes me happy though. There's a little 5-minute clip about how they set all this up, and Pisani's talking about it. So hearing Charlie Pisani say that snowmobiles are like jet skis are amazing. But yeah, they secured it. They put water over the top of it because they wanted to make it seem dangerous. But a dude just fell in a lake.
That's right.
So
That's what editing is
I don't know.
for.
Maybe some of the ice
It's
resurfaced and froze by the time that he got back on it.
that cold in DC. That's right. That's just crazy. And then
I love this scene though. Like, I love it's so bombastic and it's so Rennie and it's just a perfect scene. It makes me so happy.
yes, it really is done really well. The way that he just flies across and lets us, and like you said, it's a studio shot. There's no question about it. When it's from the old movies, which they used to have people driving in cars, and you see, the background is completely fake, and here it just looks that way also. John's just having a good time on the snowmobile, chasing after some bad guys.
Yeah,
that's right.
Love and life.
and that's actually how the minute ends. And do you have anything else you want to say about the minute before we get into the script?
This is a gorgeous minute. I just have to let everyone know.
This was the Mark minute.
A snowmobile action.
That's right.
This is it. And then there's stupid lines. It's him cruising. Like, where'd he go? And then John McClane's just on a snowmobile.
That's right.
Cruising. And he nails people from 50 yards out. Like, the first movie, John McClane was a scrappy cop who was incredibly tough, could fight, could beat up most human beings on the planet. But this one, he's Uber McClane.
That's right.
For sure. But yeah, no, this is lovely.
Yeah.
I'm very glad that you saved this
game. Oh, for you, Mark. Anytime. So the script actually has some very different things that happen here. So first of all, it says that immediately McClane fires twice at the rear snowmobile. Garber is on it, and McClane's bullets rip through his chest as he falls off and spins out and rolls over. Mm. And that's the entire description of what happens at the beginning. He only kills one guy in the script, as opposed to, we don't have the Burke stunt, where he flies out into the frozen lake, stuff like that.
Hmm.
And then it switches over to inside the church. It says the upper police crashing behind the tailing soldiers. Barnes looks at the smoking ruins. That equipment, it could land our planes. And then Grant says, don't touch anything. There could be tripwires. And then it says, camera rakes to the sergeant, who is by a blinking booby trap hidden under a panel. And then he has the line about, it looks like C4, and the motherfucker is primed. That's what he says. Grant goes, evacuate, now. And then it says, exterior of the church. The soldiers and Barnes rush out, bowling over Lorenzo just as he's heading in. As all dive into the snow, the church explodes. Stained glass windows giving the destruction an eerie beauty as they shatter. As debris rains down, everyone struggles to their feet. Lorenzo spits out snow and looks around and says, hey, where the f*** is McClane? And then it says, McClane is riding on a snowmobile that cracked up, carrying the dead man's assault rifle like the Duke on a horse.
Oh, that's a good line. I like that.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I wonder why they chose in the movie not to blow up the church.
Money.
Well, they time. First of all, this was one of the most expensive budgets ever. At the time.
They didn't want it to be, right?
They didn't want it to be, but it was. It was surpassed a year later by T2. But for a year, this was the highest budget of any movie that was made. And
then it makes sense why they didn't blow it up, because they're already over budget. And they're like, listen, we're not doing this. Because how much crew you have to bring in to blow something up? You have to bring in firefighters. You have to get permits. You need to get dynamite. You need like about a month to safely blow it up. You could maybe do a miniature.
Right.
But then you have to bring in artists for that.
But I think it would have made miniature work. I think it would have made things a little more plausible.
Yeah. But there's so many explosions in this movie already that it would have just gotten lost anyway. When you think about the explosions in this movie.
How many explosions?
A church.
Tell me how many explosions there are, Mark.
Well, no. So what I'm saying is, like, when he pulls the ejector seat out, which is bonkers. And Rennie Harlan's like, I just added that.
That's right.
When you talk about the other plane exploding.
No, we're pulling the two planes exploding.
Landed, right? And that explains. Okay. Yeah. And then you have the at the end with the fire trail and the explosion.
Right.
Like, it's
and the annex
and then the passenger Skywalk. Plane going down,
right?
Yeah, and like when you have those explosions, you don't need it, like, and it's money and it's already that expensive. As a producer, I probably would have blown it up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's fair,
because then you need more stuntmen, you need more special effects people or miniatures. Like, that's a lot of work, right? And I'm not doing that.
Okay, all right, that's fair. All right, so. Every Monday, we have a segment called McClane Monday, where my guests will give their top five Bruce Willis performances. So, Mark, start at number five and work your way up. What have you got for us? I know you're going to give us a crazy list. So,
all right. So, number five is Moonrise Kingdom, because it's one of the warmest performances I've ever seen from Bruce Willis. when I was watching Moonrise Kingdom, and what I love about Wes Anderson is that he can get some beautiful performances, very warm, like from Owen Wilson, Adrian Brody. He can find warmth in his characters. And Bruce Willis in Moonrise Kingdom is unlike any character I've ever seen him play. It's the warmest character he's ever played on any film I've ever watched of his. So that's why I have it at number five. He's not the main character,
okay,
but the warmth. And I keep saying warmth, but it's true. What he's able to pull off and exude is why I have that at number five.
Okay.
I feel pretty good about that. Now, okay, so there's a lot to pick from here. I'm going to say four. It's boring, and I hate being boring, but it's Armageddon because of the ending. When he stays back and he's talking about his girl and he makes that speech, like, I feel like this is when, like, I love him in Die Hard, but I feel like Armageddon was him just fully realizing that he is a A-list action star. And when what he and Ben Affleck pull off, like, I had to watch that again for an episode and I was tearing up a bit, like, just when he stayed behind and the way he's talking. And I think what he's able to pull off in that movie, I don't think it's necessarily, I think he knows what Michael Bay wants. He does exactly what Michael Bay wants. But I just think it's an example of him putting together all of his A-list qualities to spearhead an insane movie about drillers going and blowing up an asteroid. It's like him at his most powerful.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, this probably, I think it's the first time that he, you know, was the star of a movie of where he was the main star where his character actually dies.
Exactly. Yeah. And like, he had to die. There was no,
right.
There was like, no, you don't need to die. You don't need to do that.
It's either you or
I just think it's, yeah. and he nails it for number three. This is a little bit of a different pick, but I'm going to say Death Becomes Her as Dr. Ernest Menville, because it's such a manic, alive, different sort of backstory performance. Like, he's not the action hero. He's not the super sly rom-com guy. He's not Hudson Hawk. He's not a killer like in Whole Nine Yards. He's bespectacled, which doesn't make you a nerd, but in the 90s it did. He is just sort of a whiny, loud, boisterous, nervous man. And I just love that about him. Like, it's a different performance, and I like to see him try.
Right.
It's so, like, I love seeing him try.
Right. That was at the time of his career where he was trying new things. You know.
And all power to him. Like, I love it.
That's right.
Number two. you got to do it. I'm gonna say I don't want to be that controversial, but for number two, I'm gonna say Unbreakable. I was thinking maybe Sixth Sense, but it's such a controlled performance. But I think what I'm going to add in Unbreakable is just Sixth Sense is so controlled, but Unbreakable, watching him discover his power, watching him reconnect with his wife, watching his interactions with his son, watching him duel the man in the orange suit, the way that he acts against Samuel L. Jackson, who they'd already been together before, mm-hmm, in several movies.
Right.
Two other movies. Unbreakable is my favorite superhero movie ever made.
Ditto.
And
it's up there. It's my top superhero movie. Because it shows that someone, you know, in our world, you could have a superhero.
You know, and you don't need, you know, to come from Krypton, and you don't need, you know, to have the Green Lantern Corps, or, you know, you can use any other analogy from DC or Marvel. It doesn't matter. You know, you don't have to get bitten by a bug. You know, it's just, we don't know how this happened. It's just a natural thing.
Yeah.
And it's what I love, what M. Night does, is that this guy has bones that break. So he goes, okay, it must be someone who's opposite me.
That's right.
Like, that's what I love. And I have to do that. So that's my number two. And one, you know, it's not sexy. It's not fun. But I think it would be very, like, I'm not that crazy. I think Die Hard is his number one. Because I even remember this when I was young, and I watched this movie a lot, where the John McClane, the way Bruce Willis plays him, he's not Bruce Willis yet. So he's still moonlighting, right? He's still, mm-hmm, blind dating.
Yes.
He's not Bruce Willis as we know him. So in this movie, I think there's a warmth to him when he's on the phone with Al, the way that they talk together, the emotion he finds, like when he's talking to Bonnie Bedelia in the bathroom, like he knows he messed up. Like they've gotten to a point where they can't just talk to each other. They just argue immediately. And you can see that in him. And I think the layers on layers, and like his scenes with Hans Gruber, the way he gets beat up, the way he even pulls out the physicality, his running, his shooting, his laughing, his quips in the not the elevator shaft, but in the air duct. Mm-hmm. Like, I just think it's a very well calibrated, likable, like he exploded on the screen in that one. Like, they didn't even want him on the poster
right
for these movies. And I just think
idiots
to leave that out would be controversial, and I'm not that controversial. So my number one is Die Hard. But I mean, listen, I love him. I think he's a lot of fun in Whole Nine Yards. I think he's really good in Pulp Fiction. I like him in Nobody's Fool. 12 Monkeys, we've seen him in a Terry Gilliam film, is pretty unbelievable. Fifth Element's great. I think at the end he's able to find a really good amount of emotion there, but I'm happy with mine. I'm happy with my top five.
All right, excellent. All right, so Mark, you want to tell people how they can find Mark Hoffmeyer?
Yeah, just movies, films, and flicks, FLIX, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Mark Hoffmeyer on X or Twitter. And then I'm writing currently for The Ringer. I'm writing for Rotten Tomatoes. I'm writing for Fandom, and I write for Film Theory. So go to all those places on YouTube, and you can find all my videos and articles.
All right, excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcatcher might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.